Hello and welcome to another Catholic News podcast. Now, the topic today is a very strong and pertinent one. We're going to be talking about human trafficking and modern slavery. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Kevin Hyland, the UK's first independent anti-slavery commissioner. Kevin, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You're a busy man, clearly.
Well, it has been a busy year, but, you know, this is a very serious subject that needs a coordinated response. And I have the job of leading that. As I've said when I first got the job, it's not a privilege to have this role, because how can it be a privilege to have a role that shouldn't exist? But as I have heard Cardinal Vincent say, it is a privilege to be of service. So the service I can bring to those who are suffering and to relieve them of that suffering is the privilege that I have got in the role as anti-slavery commissioner.
Now, your role received royal assent roughly a year ago now. What's your first year in the job been like? I know you sort of said that it would be better if the role didn't have to exist, but how are you tackling this rather daunting mountain of work?
Well, my role in the legislation is about improving the response, and that means preventing the crime happening. It means increasing the numbers of victims who are identified and supported, but also increasing the numbers of prosecutions, so those who commit these crimes who end up being prosecuted and imprisoned. So they're the three areas that I'm covering, and I've got a statutory footing over what's relevant agencies, which is really law enforcement, local authorities, health and immigration services. But I also have a responsibility to work with the non-government organisations, not just in the United Kingdom. I cover the whole of England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, but actually on an international remit. And that's very much the part of prevention that I look at. Of course, we have trafficking within the UK, but very many of the victims come from overseas. So if I look at the figures in the last year, we have had a 40% increase in victims. So last year, the figures were 3,266, which was a 40% increase on 2014. Now, that's obviously important because that means more victims are being identified and supported. But also we've had a 100% increase in cases that are reaching the courts. So in 2014, that was 176 cases. In 2015, it was 370. So things are going in the right direction. But one of the things I am worried about is of that 3,266, I've reviewed every police force in the United Kingdom, and it only resulted in 851 investigations being commenced. So that means there's a large amount of victims whose cases aren't investigated. And of that 3,266, over 980 of them were minors. So, you know, it's shocking that even all the cases involving minors aren't being investigated properly. So when I look at the risk there is to vulnerable people who are being trafficked, particularly children and minors, particularly when we realise all of the issues there are with unaccompanied minors at the moment, they're the things that I'm tackling to make sure that there is 100% investigation rate of those that are reported, so that we will see the perpetrators caught, but we will make sure victims are properly supported.
Now, obviously, you've travelled extensively as a result of what you've just said. But what I'd like to sort of concentrate on for this particular podcast is a set country example, because I know you've talked about strategic approaches, not working in silos, everyone being joined up with their work to tackle this awful crime. You've spoken about Edo State in Nigeria before, where I believe some 94% of the Nigerian women trafficked out of Nigeria actually come from that state, which actually has a relatively small percentage of the population. How come trafficking is so localised in that area?
Yeah, and this is a shocking thing. You know, I mentioned numbers and percentages, but each one of those is a person. And that's the thing we have to remember. It's a person at the back of each of these. But if you actually look at it and you talk about numbers, so, you know, it's been incredible that such a large amount of people, women and girls, have been continuously trafficked out of Nigeria into Europe. And there's not really been a response. Now, the reason it happens there is, if we go back to the 1990s, Edo State was doing a lot of trade with Italy about gems and stones and jewellery. That then became harder to do as the trade routes, you know, broke down, and also as the borders got stricter. But the criminals moved in and they started moving women for prostitution. So actually, this is quite a new thing. If you look, we're only talking about going back to the 1990s. But the criminals have moved in that period and really made this a valuable trade route in human beings. So that's never been addressed properly in that region. Yes, there's been projects there, and I've worked very much in that region. I've worked with Benin University, I'm working in Urumi, and looking at what the problems are. But when I've been there and I've met the mothers and the fathers of peoples who've been trafficked, I mean, one mother said to me, you know, why don't you in Europe, why don't you come and help stop our families taking these risks? However, there are also situations in the area where families do think it's worth someone taking the risk so that they can come to Europe and, you know, perhaps they believe become very wealthy. And that's the issue, and that's the approach that I'm taking in Edu State, working in partnership in a new way so that we can address it differently. Because actually, in Edu State, the only message that's being given is the one coming from the criminals. And that message is, you know, let's all go to Europe. Let's all go to other parts of the world where you will become wealthy. So my approach is different in that we're working on three areas. Firstly, with the community. And in Edu State, it is mostly a Catholic state. So by working with the church, we can get the message to many people. When I attended meetings over a three-day period in Urumi, the church was able to convene over 10,000 people in a very quick time. So if we did this over a long period of time, over 3 years, we will be able to reach vast amounts of the population, but telling them the truth about what's happening. But then using the message of, for example, Pope Francis, and taking something to them in a way of distributing it on screens, having events, so that we can really get the message that the risks are high and the benefits are non-existent. So the communities know what the risks are and changing their viewpoint on it. The next bit, though, is around rule of law. And rule of law is important because we need to show to the communities that this is a crime and that people who commit these crimes will be punished. And by working with NAPTIP and by increasing their capacity, but not just a short-term course, but working over a period of time to increase their capacity is essential. And then the third part is we can give communities awareness, we can give rule of law, but we need to give a reason why people stay. So we're looking at how we can work with the local communities but in creating job opportunities, but particularly looking at agribusiness. Because in Edu State, the soil is very fertile. They are growing fruits and it's very commercially viable. I've had representative of a Harper Adams University, which is a university here in the United Kingdom, which specialises in agribusiness, who have gone and evaluated there. And we do think there is an opportunity there to create a commercial enterprise where they can actually create jobs and commerce. But actually, at the moment, what they are doing in that region is they are selling the fruit at the side of the road, maybe earning a dollar a day. So there is a big demand across the world at the moment for those sort of valuable assets such as fruit juices and fruits, etc. So if we can educate them and enable them to actually sell these in a much more commercial way, then we create a reason why people can stay.
I should point out at this point that NAPTIP is the National Agency for the Prohibition of Trafficking in Persons in Nigeria, isn't it?
That's correct, yes.
Just tell me how you identified this state as being obviously at the heart of trafficking out of Nigeria.
Well, it was figures that were provided by the UN, having done research there. But the way we've really got access to the communities, and I've met with tribal leaders, I've met with what are called local obas, who are local royalty. Some are Catholic, some are other Christian faiths, some are Muslim. But the reach of the Catholic Church there has really given us access. And I'm working very closely with the Archbishop of Benin and the Bishop of Urumi, who are keen to lead on these projects. So we're looking at how we can bring together the UK's overseas aids and our budgets, perhaps, and looking at how we can assist in those regions to develop the projects I'm suggesting. But even without, you know, funding, there's a lot we can do, because in Benin City, for example, the women religious run a centre I have been to that centre. The work they are doing is extraordinary. And I had women there telling me about the fact that they were trafficked to Europe. They told me about where they were taken to in Italy, and they were held there. And then they were taken on to Paris, and some were actually destined for the UK. But actually, the information they've got isn't being shared with law enforcement. And the sisters are very keen that it is shared with law enforcement. But how do they do that? So by creating better relationships with the law enforcement, NAPTIP agency in Nigeria, with our own national crime agency, with Europol, Interpol, we can actually coordinate far better. And I think that's a good example of the work that the sisters are doing, the reach the church has got, but how we can actually change the global response to human trafficking and modern slavery and bring to account those who commit the crimes.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and we should definitely stress the fact that this isn't something that just occurs 2,000 miles away. There is a direct impact on these poor women ending up on the UK streets, in the sex trade and others, I'm sure. So you talk about funding, and clearly there's a need for that. How is the UK involved, or how can the UK get involved to actually do its bit in this supply line?
Well, as you rightly say, this happens on the streets of our cities and towns across the United Kingdom. You know, a case in recent years where a 14-year-old was brought from Nigeria. She was placed in a house in East London where she was raped daily, sold for sex. When she was no more use to them, she was then being sold to go to France to work in the streets of a French city.
And she presumably thought she would get decent work in the UK.
Coming to the UK, she thought it would be, you know, really exciting. She thought she was going to go and study. She thought she would get well educated. Now, thankfully, you know, she has gone through a process. Well, I say thankfully, she was actually arrested as a criminal because people thought she had committed crimes. But thankfully, she was rescued. She was supported. Those that abused her have been convicted and gone to prison. She is now studying law because she wants to be a lawyer. She is doing really well. But that is happening in London. And it's not just one occasion. It's happening time and time again on hundreds of occasions each month.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, that's a painful example. But we'd be naive to think there aren't other 14, 15-year-olds on our streets in exactly that predicament, wouldn't we?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. We've got women, girls and boys and men who come from regions such as Nigeria and elsewhere in the world who are being exploited in our towns and cities. And many of those cases have been reported where there's been convictions, but it's a vast majority are suffering in silence. So going back to what you say, what can the UK do? Well, we do need to work in partnership with these other countries. For example, recently, an event hosted by the Holy See at the United Nations, that really highlighted international efforts. It spoke about the fact that we have all signed up to Sustainable Development Goals, and specifically, and very much at the behest of the Vatican, there is a specific goal which says we need to eradicate modern slavery in the next 15 years. Now, when I think about that, you know, eradicating this crime in 15 years' time, is that possible? Well, if we look back to the times of William Wilberforce, he was ridiculed in Parliament when he even suggested the fact that slavery should be abolished. But it took him about 20 years to get the transatlantic slave trade abolished. And when you think that was in a time when slavery was birth, marriage, and death, and it was accepted as a way of life, it was legal. Or slavery is illegal in every country in the world. And so we should be able to do something about it. We should be able to do something in the next 15 years. So it's a hard task, but we should be able to address it. And of course, in Wilberforce's day, it was one treaty and then the British Navy intervening and that stopped it. Obviously, it's a much trickier, much more complex situation now because it is entwined in our daily lives. You know, the clothes we wear, for all we know, they could be made by slaves in India, yeah, in Bangladesh. We've seen what happened in Rana Plaza only a couple of years ago, where there was slavery making clothes for our high street stores. We see in Bradford recently a factory that was making beds for our high street brands. people were kept in slavery there. And the director of that company went to prison for offences of modern slavery. So it's happening everywhere. So we have to be aware of it. But I think the United Kingdom, looking at what we can do internationally, how can we use our budgets and our overseas budgets to fund projects to actually change the culture? It's no good just going in and doing awareness raising without doing the other things, which is about giving opportunities and without increasing rule of law. So that's why I'm very keen that this three-pillared approach that we're addressing in Nigeria, but very much in partnership with local representatives. The Catholic Church is right at the heart of that because it has got the reach and has got the trust in that region. And I think that that project, you know, we're all very keen that it's delivered. And over the next year, it's very ambitious, but it's something I would like to see. And I think with the support of the people in Nigeria, who are very much going to lead on this, we can start to bring some change to the suffering in that region.
And Kevin, just finally, if you had a message or something that you could say simply to our listeners and to the Catholic community in England and Wales about how we take this on collectively as a group, what would you say to them?
I think we need to listen to the Holy Father, who has clearly said this is happening everywhere in the world. And we see the migrant crisis, and we already know there are traffickers who are there looking to pick up children, women and men, to turn them into a commodity, to sell them on the streets of London, Birmingham, Manchester. So accept it happens. First of all is accept it happens and understand what it means. Because if people just push this into the corner of this being an immigration or migration issue, no, this is a crime against a human being. This is exactly the same as any other crime against a human being, whether that crime is rape or assault. This is a crime where somebody's life is in effect stolen, and sometimes it is taken. So we need to accept it. And then we need to be very clear. Once we accept that it happens, we're not going to accept to allow it to happen. So, for example, no matter where you are in the United Kingdom, you may have a car wash operating near where you live. It may be next door to your church. Is that car wash legitimate? Are the people who are working there properly protected? Are they wearing health and safety equipment? Or are they just in old jeans and trainers? Are they getting soaked every day? Do they look like they're being properly fed? Now, if we look in Northamptonshire, for example, they started looking at car washes in that way, and they ended up rescuing a number of people from modern slavery and arresting traffickers.
Now, if you're a person and you spot those things and you have your doubts and you're not sure, you might not know what to do. What would be the first thing you could do?
Well, there's a number of things you could do. I mean, if you thought somebody was at risk, you can call the police. Maybe you're not in a position to do that, or maybe that will not be the best thing to do. You can write to the local authority and say, why is this car wash happening? The other thing you can do, though, is the Modern Slavery Helpline, which is 0800 0121 700. You could contact that number and tell them the piece of information you've seen.
Brilliant.
But it's wider than car washes. We hear about nail bars. We hear about people working in the agricultural sector, construction. All of these issues, food packing, the Apostleship of the Sea have just started a campaign around the fact that so many people in the fishing industry are potentially being exploited. So there are a number of projects that are going on at the moment. And we see that Mary Immaculate University in the Republic of Ireland is hosting a conference next month, bringing in Scotland, Northern Ireland, England and Wales and other European partners to talk about the risks of vulnerable people, particularly from countries like the Philippines and Indonesia, being exploited in the North Atlantic. So there's a lot going on, but start getting aware of it, then having a position that this is unacceptable, and then calling on the people who've got to respond, whether that's the police, the local authority or the healthcare, to actually take action and make sure that vulnerable people are protected. But there are also projects that are coming out of the Santa Marta Group, which is what the Pope is leading on, bringing together law enforcement and bishops from around the world. Well, for example, they've set up a rescue centre in London, but they're looking at how they can expand those centres across the United Kingdom. So the Catholic Church needs to start understanding where its assets are, where it can give help. There are many religious orders already supporting traffic victims, but I think the more that people know, and the Catholic community and the congregations, the more they share their information and actually express their outrage that this is happening in the United Kingdom or in the world, then that will start to get the change of culture that we need. Because whilst people accept and just ignore this is happening, it will just carry on.
Very strong. And I have to say, we all certainly have our part to play. You've got the helpline number, listeners, you've heard that. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us. You frightened me a bit with the scale of the task, but it can be tackled if approached in the right way. And I certainly appreciate your time. And hopefully you'll come back and update us on how you're getting on in the coming months.
Yes, thank you very much, James, and look forward to speaking to you again.